This message comes from On Point sponsor Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, introducing Rate Shield approval. If you qualify and if rates go up, your rate stays the same. But if rates go down, your rate also drops. To learn more, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Last night, everything shifted again after The New Yorker published a second set of allegations of sexual misconduct against Judge Brett Kavanaugh. He denies the new claims, and presidential adviser Kellyanne Conway says the White House stands by Kavanaugh.
I just don't think one man's shoulders should bear decades of the Me Too movement.
All this against the backdrop of a major story about Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. Here's the president responding to the New York Times story claiming that Rosenstein talked about secretly recording Trump.
Just look at what is now being exposed in our Department of Justice and the FBI. Look at what's going on.
Meanwhile, the president is at the UN this week taking a hard line on American sovereignty, so welcome to Monday. This hour On Point, top reporters tell us what they're watching for in the week ahead, and you can join us. What do you make of the latest allegations against Brett Kavanaugh? What do you think the president should say about America and American sovereignty at the UN this week? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Well, joining me this hour, we've got a terrific roundtable of top journalists. Molly Ball is with us. She's national political correspondent for Time Magazine and CNN's political analyst. As well. Molly, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Kimberly Atkins. She's chief Washington reporter for the Boston Herald. Kim, it's good to have you back.
Hi, Meghna.
And I should say, by the way, we've got links to everyone's terrific reporting at onpointradio.org. Kimberly, let me just start with you. The New Yorker published its story about a second set of allegations against Judge Kavanaugh last night. That put everyone seemingly in a bit of a froth. I mean, what was your first thought when you saw the new reporting?
Yeah, I mean, leading up to last night, there was this idea that the likelihood that Brett Kavanaugh would be confirmed was pretty solid, absent something else dropping, and that something else would be additional allegations. And then last night, that's what we got, just hours after Dr. Christine Blasey Ford agreed to appear on Thursday at a hearing to give her allegations. We have this second person, Deborah Ramirez, who has come forward to say in college, while they were both at Yale, that Brett Kavanaugh did something lewd and essentially put his genitals in her face at a party. This seems to, so far from what I can tell, has galvanized conservatives behind Kavanaugh. Instead of saying, hey, we should let this one woman be heard and then move forward with the vote, it seems the new line this morning is this is a Democratic smear campaign that's being coordinated to try to keep this justice off the bench. So it seems, if anything, the sides have dug in. Democrats want this hearing to be put aside and have an FBI investigation into these new allegations. So I think, if anything, this new revelation has polarized the two sides even more than they were 24 hours ago.
So, Molly, let's just talk for a second a bit more about what The New Yorker published yesterday. I mean, Jane Mayer and Ronan Farrow acknowledge that they couldn't actually find any eyewitnesses to go on the record with them to what Ramirez is claiming, and that also Ramirez herself acknowledges that perhaps her story is somewhat problematic because she acknowledges that she was drinking that night too and had some gaps in her memory as well. That's all acknowledged in the story. So, I mean, do you think that this new set of accusations, which again Judge Kavanaugh denies unequivocally, does it carry the same weight as what Professor Christine Blasey Ford had alleged a while ago, or does it even matter?
I think it matters. I think it intensifies what was already a quite pitched battle over this nomination. And I think Kim is exactly right that it has sort of polarized both sides. On the one hand, it has galvanized conservatives behind Kavanaugh, but it has also galvanized Democrats to, they were already calling for hearings, they were already calling for delays, but they feel now that they have even more, a stronger ground to stand on in making those demands. And, you know, the Democrats don't have the power to delay this hearing by the, or derail the nomination by themselves. But there are several Republican senators who are viewed as swing votes, who have not come down on one side or another. And, you know, if Republicans knew that the votes were there, they would have held the vote already. The fact is the votes are not there yet. And that is why they've scheduled this hearing. And so even if the hearing is as planned, only two people, only Judge Kavanaugh and Dr. Ford, this raises more questions that you can absolutely bet that Judge Kavanaugh is going to be called on to answer.
Mm. Well, I want to play some tape here of how various folks in Washington have been responding to the past 24 hours. First of all, here's Kellyanne Conway, presidential advisor. She was on CBS This Morning Today addressing the new accusations against Brett Kavanaugh.
I know there's pent-up demand for women to get their day, women who have been sexually harassed and sexually assaulted, and I personally am very aggrieved for all of them. But are we going to put decades of pent-up demand for women to feel whole on one man's shoulders? What exactly is the standard for ruining one man's life based on decades of allegations that have nothing to do with him?
Meanwhile, Democratic Senator Patty Murray was on Meet the Press on Sunday morning.
The Senate failed the test in 1991 with Anita Hill, that they could deal with this kind of allegation. And they have to be able to deal with this kind of allegation if we're going to be putting people on the highest court of the land. Mm-hmm. And here we are today. How the Senate handles this and the Senate Republicans handle this will be a test of this time, of 2018, in the Me Too movement. Can we do better?
That's Senator Patty Murray on Sunday. Well, joining us now is Susan Page. She's USA Today Washington Bureau Chief, and she's with us today from Dallas. Susan, it's good to have you.
Hey, it's great to be with you.
All right, so we just heard those two really interesting, almost diametrically opposed points of view from Kellyanne Conway and Senator Patty Murray. I mean, Kellyanne Conway saying you can't, you know, put the entire weight of the Me Too movement on Judge Kavanaugh's shoulders, whereas Patty Murray is saying, well, in fact, that's exactly why the Senate needs to handle, or the Senate Judiciary Committee needs to handle this moment differently than it did in 1991. I mean, what are your thoughts?
So I don't think the issue is the Me Too movement as an entirety in this case. I think this is a question of whether there are credible allegations against this particular Supreme Court nominee that will convince at least two Republican senators not to vote for his confirmation. That said, it is certainly true that the Me Too movement over the past year has changed the political calculus by everyone involved about who gets heard and who gets believed. The context is so much different than it was back in 1991 with the Anita Hill hearings, which I covered for Newsday. There is a much greater willingness to take seriously the allegations of women, even when the allegations are of incidents that are years old and where there are not corroborating witnesses. But people are, I think, more willing now to listen. And that's why this hearing on Thursday, assuming it moves forward, will be so important in persuading people who they ought to believe.
Yeah. So, Molly, let me turn to you about that, because I think Susan's exactly right. We've been hearing from, you know, members of both parties and possibly most notably Republicans who wish to see Judge Kavanaugh confirmed, that they still nevertheless believe that Professor Ford should be heard. Right. We've heard that language, that women should be heard. But on the other hand, if really the issue is, are these credible allegations, is being heard enough? Isn't an actual, independent investigation the only way to really judge the credibility of the allegations?
Well, that's up to every individual senator and his or her conscience and what standard that they believe the nominee has to meet. You know, I think the fact that she is being heard is going to sway a lot of people. Ideally, beyond all of the partisan noise, this is an earnest effort to discover the truth. And there are a lot of outstanding questions for both of these human beings. And so the senators in charge of the committee believe that it can be, if not definitively settled, some clarity can be brought by hearing from these two witnesses. So that's where they're going to begin. And then it will be up to all of those senators. You know, I think to Susan's point, that when the Anita Hill hearing, a lot of the Democrats involved in that process have expressed regret for the way that Anita Hill was treated. It was not so much of a partisan situation back then, because you had Democrats and Republicans on an all-male committee in an almost all-male Senate, really not treating her as someone who deserved to be heard and believed on her own terms. So it is a test of this moment that we're in, not whether or not he gets confirmed, because that should be based on the credibility of the allegations themselves, but how she is treated and whether she is respected as someone with a story to tell, and whether women are given equal voice in this process.
Right. But Kimberly, I'm going to come back to you in a second. But Molly, can I just follow up on one thing? Because I heard you say that, there is an earnest effort to discover the truth here. But I mean, is that genuinely the case? Or to your other point about it, this is a question of also credibility and character, because I can imagine that we won't actually get to the truth, but we can make judgments on credibility and character based on what, you know, these two people might say on Thursday. They're not necessarily the same things.
Well, first of all, as a reporter, I reject the cynicism that says truth is impossible to find. There is truth, and maybe we can find it, and maybe we can't. But let's not assume before we've even had the hearing that it is unfindable. Now, that being said, we may never get to the definitive bottom of this, and I don't think that it necessarily is an earnest effort to find out the truth by everyone involved. But it ought to be. That's what it would be in an ideal world, where these political considerations could be quieted a bit, and the senators could engage in an effort to find out what's true and what's not.
Well, so Kimberly, I mean, I agree with Molly that the truth is absolutely findable, but is having testimony from either side of an allegation the best way to do it? I guess I'm coming back to that question of, there are still people calling for independent investigations, and I'm not seeing that forthcoming from, leadership on the Judiciary Committee.
Yeah, look, at the end of the day, the Senate's tasked with advising and consenting on these nominees, and the Senate is a political body. It is not an objective fact-finding body. This is the process that we have. It is a deeply flawed one and an imperfect one, and we're seeing that play out. This isn't like a court of law or other places where you have evidence and rules that try to protect the truth. In this case, this is the situation we have, and of course it's tainted by politics, but at least we will hear, as Molly said, from these two individuals, and their credibility can be assessed.
All right. Well, we'll pick up that thought when we come back. I'm joined today by Susan Page, Molly Ball, and Kimberly Atkins, and we're talking about what to look for in the week ahead. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
This message comes from On Point sponsor Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, introducing their all-new Rate Shield approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Quicken Loans will lock your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states, NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
This is Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We do long-form interviews with the people behind the best books, pop culture, journalism, and more, so you can get to know the people whose work you love. You'll find Fresh Air on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about what to look for in the week ahead. And obviously top on that list is the ongoing confirmation hearings of Judge Brett Kavanaugh to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the new allegations published just yesterday evening in The New Yorker, a second set of allegations of sexual misconduct against Judge Kavanaugh. I'm joined today by Susan Page. She's USA Today Washington Bureau Chief. By Molly Ball. She's National Political Correspondent for Time. And by Kimberly Atkins, Chief Washington Reporter for The Boston Herald. And just this morning, on the new radio show Geraldo in Cleveland, President Donald Trump appeared on the show, and Geraldo asked the president whether he still trusted Kavanaugh to be on the U.S. Supreme Court.
He's got an outstanding record, very smart, top of the line education, the best student no matter where he went, and honestly, the best character, unless she can prove otherwise, and we're going to give her chance to do that.
Susan Page, so Professor Ford has agreed to testify on Thursday, but of course we're also hearing that Senator Dianne Feinstein is calling for a postponement in these hearings. Do you think they will go forward on Thursday?
I think the chances are good they go forward. Not guaranteed, because this is a moving target this week. Who would have predicted all the developments we had last night, for instance, in this situation? But I think the Senate Republicans definitely do not want more delays on this nomination. They know that they came to the conclusion they had to accommodate Dr. Ford to allow her to speak to the committee, but I think they are not inclined to agree to further delays. You know, their concern is if this nomination doesn't get pushed through now, they will have trouble getting another nominee through the process, even using a lame duck session before the new Senate takes over. And while Republicans are likely to hold the Senate in the midterm elections, that is no guarantee. And in one ironic turn, this case could affect whether the Republicans manage to hold the Senate, because you see places like Missouri, a competitive Senate race in Missouri, where the Democratic incumbent Claire McCaskill has been kind of on the run on the Kavanaugh nomination by her opponent, Josh Hawley. He is now, I think, less likely to press this, given these developments we've seen that are of real concern to suburban women voters who may be the key to these midterms.
Molly Ball, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. It is actually kind of insane that this is happening now, considering that all of these questions that this nomination now invokes were the questions that we were already talking about in this midterm election season. This was already an election season about angry women. This was already an election season about, women rising up in reaction to President Trump, in reaction to the Me Too revelations, in reaction to all sorts of things. This was already an election where these issues of power and who gets to speak and who has a voice, they were already on the table. And those have all just been invigorated by this controversy, by this nomination. So while the conventional wisdom has always been that it's conservatives who tend to vote based on being motivated by the Supreme Court, whereas liberals aren't just not particularly interested in it, that could be a different situation now, just because the voting dynamic is such that the voters who appear most energized by this are the ones who are already energized. Plus, if something happens and this nomination doesn't go through, the reason Republicans scheduled it so close to the midterms was to energize their voters. So those voters are not going to have that victory to point to, not going to have that talking point of see what we in the Republican Congress have done for you if, in fact, this nomination flounders.
Yeah. Kim, what's your take on that?
I think that's right. I think there is a deep concern on the part of Republicans about losing this sort of carefully created alliance within their own party between conservatives who are not happy with Donald Trump, but who are very happy with his appointments to not just the U.S. Supreme Court, but the entire federal judiciary. And it's sort of a pact that they will stick with him so long as they get this out of it. If they see the Republicans walking away from Brett Kavanaugh, for example, if these allegations continue to mount, that will risk fracturing that delicate agreement. On the other hand, if they stick with him, even if his nomination is defeated, then the enemy becomes the Democrats, right? Or the people who they see as creating this scheme this plan to sort of derail this nomination. And at least they still have that energy behind them. I think that is why in this case, the Republicans are going to stick with Brett Kavanaugh no matter what happens, because they really don't see a political alternative.
Right. Susan Page, I'm going to get to callers here in just a second, but I wanted to run something by you because, Molly mentioned about, the scheduling of the vote around Kavanaugh. I was just remembering that in the New Yorker piece last night, they write that the office regarding this latest set of allegations, that the offices of at least four Democratic senators have received information about the allegation, and they go on to say at least two have begun investigating it. Senior Republican staffers also learned of the allegation last week and in conversations with The New Yorker expressed concerns about its potential impact on Kavanaugh's nomination. And soon after, Senate Republicans issued renewed calls to accelerate the timing of a committee vote. Your thoughts on that?
Well, delay is not the Republicans' friend on this because it opens the door to more allegations coming forward and demanding to be examined and just slowing things down. That's been one of the there's been a real impetus by Republicans to do this, hold this vote as soon as they can hold it. And these last minute allegations, the eruption of them, has defied that that plan. So there is some concern about Republicans about whether this nomination will go forward, whether Judge Kavanaugh might decide for the good of his family or for whatever reason that it's not worth the fight. There are no signs of that so far. He's indicated he considers this a smear he's going to respond to, but that does sometimes happen. And whether President Trump sticks with him. You played the clip from him on the radio show saying, throwing his full support behind Judge Kavanaugh. But the fact is, there's not a long history between these two men. There was some suspicion by Trump's allies toward Judge Kavanaugh, who was, of course, a veteran of the George W. Bush White House. There are other conservative jurists who could be nominated. So I think that's one of the things we're watching. Does President Trump hold firm behind Kavanaugh? And does Kavanaugh decide he wants to stay and fight?
Well, let's go to Scott, who's calling from Hartsville, South Carolina. You're on the air, Scott.
2 points I want to bring up for discussion. I understand that Dianne Feinstein is wanting to, put a halt to the nomination process and delay. But what gets me, and it's so funny, is that she had this information for weeks ahead of time. If she was really concerned about having a true FBI investigation, why didn't she come up with the information earlier? Mm. Secondly, it just seems to me that the timing on this thing, if we call for an FBI investigation, it's going to push it behind the midterms election, which we know is going to be a close election. Sounds like a ploy on the Democrat side to kind of slow things down. Well, if it's so important that the FBI investigate this, when she got the information, why didn't she come straight out with it? And secondly, the court of popular opinion, it just seems like here lately that, like Judge Kavanaugh, it's not an American thing anymore. It's you're guilty until proven innocent. And I'll take the discussion off air.
Scott, thank you so much for your call. Kimberly Atkins, let me turn that to you. I think part of the reason why Dianne Feinstein, has, at least what she's publicly said, is why she didn't release information earlier is because until Christine Ford made herself public, she had requested Senator Feinstein maintain her anonymity in the letters that she'd written. But I guess, you know, Scott makes me think of a different question regarding an FBI investigation. That investigation need not be public. Was there anything preventing Senator Feinstein from getting the wheels turning for a quiet sort of private independent investigation?
No, and there wasn't. And according to Senator Feinstein, she did turn the information over to the FBI. The timetable on that is not entirely clear, whether it was very close to Dr. Ford coming forward publicly herself or not. But you're right. Dianne Feinstein says that it was Dr. Ford's decision on whether to go public. And I think they knew unless they had a public face, it may have been difficult to come forward with an anonymous allegation publicly that probably would have been dismissed as fake news. So that is the parameters there. But sort of getting to the broader point that the caller raised about the Democrats wanting to delay until after the midterms and the Republicans wanting to get this vote in beforehand. Of course, that's both correct.
Yeah.
This is like I mentioned, this is a political body that has their political objectives here. Of course, that is pulling at this entire thing on both sides. And it's just another example of why when it comes to an allegation like this that really requires some fact finding and getting to the bottom of what happened, the Senate is a really, really imperfect place for that kind of discussion to take place.
We've got more questions about potential investigations. So let's go to Brent, who's calling from Fairfield, Iowa. You're on the air, Brent.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. And actually, the prior caller addressed this to some extent, but I am concerned insofar as they do not pursue, the FBI investigation has not been pursued. It begs the question, are they hiding something? Is there something we don't know about? Mr. Kavanaugh apparently does not want to do the FBI investigation, and nor does the Senate Judiciary Committee. But as you've pointed out repeatedly, this is a political process.
Yeah. Well, Brent, thank you for your call. And Molly, let me turn to you on that, because we, of course, should never assume that an investigation would simply end up being a confirmation of allegations, right? I mean, there is always the possibility that an investigation completely exonerates the accused. So, I guess maybe that gets to Brent's question. Why the resistance from Kavanaugh himself, beyond the delay factor? Can we know why the judge is resisting the launching of an investigation?
Well, I do think it is mostly about the delay factor and wanting to get this process completed. From Kavanaugh's perspective, he's innocent. There's nothing to find. Therefore, an investigation is not necessary. And while it's possible that an investigation could put this thing to rest, it certainly would take some time. But I do think there are a lot of questions about the way Senator Feinstein has handled this. The timing is very strange. The fact that she did send the then anonymous allegation to the FBI, but not until the hearings had been completed, the original hearings in which he was questioned by the committee. And at that point, the information wasn't shared with the rest of the committee. There's just a lot of things here that don't make a lot of sense, and you can imagine it being handled in a manner that would have made it possible to even whether or not the accuser decided to come forward. But I think what she has sort of said is that the reason she came forward was in part out of frustration that the people that she sort of trusted to handle the secret information she'd given them didn't appear to be doing anything with it.
Let's go to Laura, who's calling from Des Moines, Iowa. You're on the air, Laura.
Thank you. So I just want to correct the two women on there that, you know, maybe you should read the actual article, the original one. She has come out repeatedly and said she did not want her name used because she knew that she would probably have to move, that she would have death threats. I mean, we women, our whole lives, we calculate, we watch men. We have to know men. We have to know what they want. And now we need men to trust women. We need men to step forward and give women the benefit of the doubt, because we do that all the time for men.
Laura, can I just ask you a question? Don't hang up yet. I mean, you're there in Iowa. Senator Grassley is your senator. I mean, I don't know where you fall politically, but are people being galvanized around this? Are they calling Senator Grassley?
Yes, many women. I have myself, both his offices here in Des Moines and Washington. You know, obviously, as a Democrat, and that's what I am, I don't want Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court. However, he should be given the same amount of, you know, investigation, any sort of allegations coming up. I mean, Merrick Garland was on hold for almost 400 days, and he didn't even have an allegation of sexual assault in his past.
Yeah.
Now we have two.
Well, hang on here, Laura. Laura, don't hang up yet, because I want to play a bit of tape from you. This is from South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican Lindsey Graham. This is what he said on Fox News Sunday.
What do you expect me to do? You can't bring it in a criminal court. You would never sue civilly. You couldn't even get a warrant. What am I supposed to do? Go ahead and ruin this guy's life based on an accusation. I don't know when it happened. I don't know where it happened. And everybody named in regard to being there said it didn't happen.
So, Laura, I mean, I heard you say earlier that men need to start trusting women. But here's Senator Lindsey Graham saying that this could ruin Judge Kavanaugh's life.
Sure. And, you know, women who, and I've been assaulted when I was younger, and I didn't come forward, and it still stuck with me for my whole life. It didn't ruin my life, but it just gave me a perspective that I think a lot of men don't have. And the frustration with Feinstein and
Graham,
the structures we have built are all built with a man's frame of mind in mind, because they're the ones who built that status quo. So we need to get more women in office, and that is going to happen in November.
Laura, thank you for your call. Susan Page, do you want to respond to that?
So Laura is the Republicans' worst nightmare, because she's in Des Moines. She's living in a swing state. She's clearly angry about what is happening and energized. I think there is zero possibility that Laura doesn't go to vote in the midterms in November. She said she's a Democrat, but independent women and Republican-leaning women, we've heard some of the same things from them as this case unfolds. So the political cost for Senate Republicans could be high. I mean, that is one reason you see the Senate Republicans talking about having an outside counsel do the questioning. That is because they apparently don't trust themselves to not create more problems for themselves in the manner and questions that they would be asking Dr. Ford.
Kim, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, and I just want to start off by saying, you know, I have read the articles and done my own reporting. And what I'd been speaking about up to this point has been the political analysis of this in terms of the politics. When it comes to something else, I think the caller is getting at something societal. And I think that is something that is playing a major role here, not just the difficulty that women face when they have allegations like this, but the patriarchy that is usually in place, whether it's in the government, whether it's in workplaces or other places, that make it difficult for people who are not in a position of power to make these allegations against people in a position of power. The person in the position of power always has the advantage. And I think without question, we see that here when we have a sitting federal judge being vetted by a Republican panel of 11 men and a woman having to make her allegations against that. I think that is something that the country is watching as this all plays out. And it is a big factor here.
Yeah. And Kim, I appreciate you saying that you did read the article, because I can guarantee and assure all On Point listeners that Kimberly Atkins, Molly Ball, and Susan Page are three power journalists who definitely do their homework. When we come back, we'll talk about a couple of the other events to look out for in this week's news. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
This message comes from NPR's sponsor, Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting to your short list of qualified candidates fast. With Indeed, post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free when you sign up at Indeed.com/NPR podcast. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
How much would you pay to avoid morning traffic? Why are plane tickets to Boise so expensive? I'm Cardiff Garcia, co-host of The Indicator. In every episode, we take on a new, unexpected idea to help you make sense of the day's news. Listen every afternoon on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about the news to look for in the week ahead, and I'm joined today by Susan Page. She's USA Today Washington Bureau Chief. Also joined by Molly Ball, National Political Correspondent for Time, and by Kimberly Atkins as well. She's Chief Washington Reporter for the Boston Herald. Of course, we've been talking about the latest in developments in the hearings, the confirmation hearings for Judge Brett Kavanaugh. There's also that New York Times report that Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein had talked about secretly taping the president. And meanwhile, President Donald Trump himself is at the UN this week. So let's pick up with that point here quickly. Yesterday on ABC's This Week, UN Ambassador Nikki Haley was asked what the president's message to the United Nations would be.
The overall message is the success stories of the United States, the fact that we have almost defeated ISIS, the fact that we're looking at North Korea, who's now at the table talking, but mainly how we're protecting America, how we're focused on our sovereignty. We're looking at aid, and we're no longer going to give money to countries that say they hate America or work against us.
Molly Ball, a quick question for you on this. I mean, on the one hand, the president at the UN means that he's not in Washington in the midst of all the furor around Kavanaugh. But on the other hand, he's going to be speaking before the United Nations General Assembly tomorrow, leading a Security Council meeting on Wednesday, really has an opportunity to once again sort of put his vision for both the UN and the U.S. Forward on the international stage.
That's right. And he has not been shy about using this platform very aggressively. The last time he was at the UN was when he called Kim of North Korea, Rocket Man, and said that the U.S. was willing to destroy North Korea. So it is going to be a very different message on North Korea this time, of course, because North Korea is now in Trump's good graces. And I think he'll probably praise the continued negotiating effort with the North Koreans. But the focus has shifted to the Iranians, and I think we're going to hear a very aggressive message out of the administration. Already there had been several in the administration, including the Secretary of State, pushing a very hard line on Iran since the cancellation of the Iran nuclear agreement. There's been an effort to go much harder against Iran and more aggressively. So I think that's going to be one of his main messages. But of course, it all comes back to his vision of the world. It all comes back to the America First ideal. You had Trump saying last week, "I'm not president of the globe." And that's very much his view of American engagement is much more about having other countries fend for themselves.
Susan Page, your thoughts on this?
Yes. Well, interesting to contrast this visit to the UN with one a year ago. The president made some headlines then on North Korea. You know, he's now, I think, considerably more confident in his ability to say what he wants and do what he wants on the world stage. I think he's less hampered by aides who tell him what he can't do or what would be impolitic to do. And that is good for him, I guess, but alarming to some of his advisors who worry about whether he would take steps that would be problematic down the road. He meets later today with the leader of South Korea. And, of course, South Korea and North Korea are in talks. South Korea would like the United States to do more in terms of gestures to North Korea. We'll see if the president's willing to do that.
Yeah, and the president is saying, this is from the Associated Press today, that a second summit with North Korea is, or actually, I should say specifically, with Kim Jong-un is likely, quote, quite soon. Not sure what that means, but Kimberly Atkins, your thoughts?
Yeah, and in particular on that issue with North Korea, yes, it will be a much different tone on North Korea from President Trump this time around, given everything that's happened in the last year and with that summit that at least brought the U.S. and North Korea together, although it has failed to really yield any measurable change in terms of the agreement. It doesn't seem to have slowed down the North Koreans or dismantled the North Koreans' nuclear program in any way. But I think there's a little bit more to navigate here, especially given the fact that North Korea and South Korea have sort of been working in a very bilateral way that sometimes has left the U.S. out. There is some concern that the cooperative nature between North and South Korea may lessen some of the power of sanctions that have been used against North Korea. That's been really the main lever of the United States to sort of get it to the table and sort of maybe the United States is sort of being pushed out here as these negotiations go forward. So I think that's something the president has to navigate. But otherwise, I agree with Molly and Susan that the president is going to be about America first. His overall message was going to be about U.S. protectionism as it relates to trade or other policies. And that's what's in store for this week.
Yeah, and I'm reading that he might also talk about his criticisms of the UN directly itself. So we'll have to see what happens on Tuesday and Wednesday. But I want to shift gears here and talk about that New York Times story that claims that Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein had talked about secretly taping the president, although that apparently did not come to pass, I should say, and also talked about perhaps invoking the 25th Amendment sometime last year. So here's how President Donald Trump himself responded to that report. He was at a campaign rally in Missouri on Friday and said this just after the New York Times published its story about Deputy AG Rod Rosenstein.
Just look at what is now being exposed in our Department of Justice and the FBI. Look at what's going on. Look at what's going on. And I want to tell you, we have great people in the Department of Justice. We have great people. These are people I really believe. You take a poll, I got to be at 95%. But you had some real bad ones. You've seen what's happened at the FBI. They're all gone. They're all gone. They're all gone. But there's a lingering stench, and we're going to get rid of that, too.
That's the president speaking in Missouri on Friday. Susan Page, how big is this story in your mind?
You know, in a year of jaw-dropping stories, I've got to say this one really ranks up there, that the deputy attorney general was talking about invoking the 25th Amendment to remove the president or wearing a wire into the Oval Office for meetings with the president. This is extraordinary. Now, Rosenstein has indicated that he was joking. His people have said he was joking. It wasn't serious. But even in jest, this is quite an extraordinary thing. There was some thought when the story broke that the president might just fire him right away. Now there's been some pushback by conservative commentators that that's a trap to get the president to look like he's obstructing justice and that he shouldn't take the bait. And so Rod Rosenstein is at the moment still has a job. But man, these are different times.
Yeah. And Susan, to your point about at the moment, he still has a job. I wonder how long that will last. I mean, Molly Ball, about the Time story, the part of it where it talked about Rosenstein talking about the 25th Amendment, the first thing I thought of was that anonymous op-ed that also appeared in the Times not that long ago, where the senior administration official had written, again, anonymously, that there were whispers of invoking the 25th Amendment last year.
Well, and to go back to at the moment, it is being reported that Rosenstein is resigning, and that I have not confirmed that, and that hasn't been confirmed by multiple media organizations, but the media organization Axios is reporting that at this moment. So that, if true, would throw the entire Justice Department and investigation into further chaos.
Let me just jump in here, Molly, because I'm seeing this Axios report. And again, it's only coming from Axios so far, but they're saying that Rosenstein has verbally resigned to John Kelly in anticipation of being fired by the president, according to an Axios source with direct knowledge. And that's just coming from them so far. We're looking for secondary or tertiary confirmation. We haven't found it yet. But just to clarify what you were saying.
Right. So if that's true, it'd be interesting for a number of reasons, in part because, you know, the president spent the whole weekend being pressed very strongly by his allies not to act on Rosenstein, not to fire Rosenstein because of the potential consequences and because of the firestorm it would ignite and all the possibilities that it would raise. So it appears, if this is true, that the president has not taken that advice. This is what his advisors always fear, is that he is predisposed to act on impulse. And even when there's a severe political downside, if he has the power to do something and he's upset, he may very well do it and just pull the trigger. So, you know, Rosenstein as Deputy Attorney General was the supervisor. He appointed Robert Mueller, the special counsel, and was supervising the Mueller investigation because Attorney General Jeff Sessions was recused. There's a lot of questions now about where that responsibility goes, whether a successor could be nominated and confirmed, and where Robert Mueller stands.
Yeah. So, Kimberly Atkins, the news is rolling along. The AP now is saying that an AP source says that Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein is expecting to be fired and is heading to the White House this morning. So it seems like the inevitable is coming for Rosenstein.
Yeah, and I think we are seeing the result of two differing factions within Republicans and within folks who are talking to the president. One that was saying, look, wait until the midterms. If you move to fire Rosenstein or move in any way against the Mueller probe before the midterms, that could result in a crisis, a political crisis that could jeopardize Republicans' chances in the midterm. If you're going to do something, wait until afterwards. We've seen even folks publicly, like Senator Lindsey Graham, conveying that message. There have also been others within that camp that said, you know what, Mr. President, if you are not satisfied with the performance of Rod Rosenstein, you should have people around you who you trust. And if you want to replace them now, you can do that. Yeah. And it seems that that faction has won and that the president needs to feel empowered moving forward and that he doesn't find that at this time. I do think that there is obviously going to be a political repercussions in the midterms after this act. But if Rosenstein does step down, you have the political repercussions. And then the first, of course, the biggest question is what happens to the Mueller Mueller investigation. It was Rod Rosenstein who authorized it. He was the one seen as the key Justice Department official protecting it. What does this mean now? And will the president try to shut it down?
Right. Susan Page, Kimberly asked the critical question, I think, because, Attorney General Sessions had recused himself. So if Rosenstein does indeed step down, what do you think is going to happen with the Mueller investigation?
Well, the immediate thing that happens is that the number three guy at the Justice Department takes over oversight. That's Noel Francisco. Speaking of jobs you wouldn't want to have, it's having the Russia investigation suddenly be part of your problem. I think you cannot overestimate the potential repercussions from Rosenstein's decision to resign if that turns out to be those reports turn out to be accurate, because we also expect Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, to be gone in short order. There's been a lot of speculation that he would resign after the midterm elections. You'd have this void at the top of one of the most critical agencies of government and the one that is leading an investigation that touches upon our elections and the White House and the president. So this is really quite extraordinary news.
Molly, your thoughts?
Well, I think the question now becomes how Republicans in Congress are going to react to this, because they have often, many of them have said that moving to fire Mueller or otherwise impede the Mueller investigation would be a red line for them. That, you know, there was a proposal before to enact some kind of legal mechanism to protect the investigation, but most of the Republicans in the House and Senate said, well, there's no indication that that's necessary at this point. The president hasn't tried to fire the special counsel. Now that we're one step closer to that possibility, I think the question is going to be whether and how the Republicans who control the Congress will see fit to try to protect the investigation in some way.
Okay, well, now Bloomberg News is reporting that Rod Rosenstein's offer to resign as deputy attorney general has been accepted by the White House, according to a person familiar with the matter. That's from Bloomberg News. Again, no official statement from the White House or the DOJ as of yet. I just want to see if I can sneak in one more call here. I think this is going to take us back to the Kavanaugh hearings, but let's go to Troy, who's calling from Iowa City, Iowa. You're on the air, Troy.
Yeah, so where I'm from, a lot of Republicans are supporting our Senator Grassley, and if you watch the hearings, you'll understand that he was very, very patient with everybody. But the deal clincher was is when Feinstein plays, you know, the joker in the list or the death card of saying, hey, we have another one, we have another one, we have another one. So they're just prolonging the agony.
Yeah.
And it was about time for Rosenstein to be replaced. I hope Mr. Trump starts draining the swamp like he promised.
Troy, thank you for your call. Susan, Molly, and Kimberly, we just got about a minute and a half left to go here. And all I can say is a lot has happened in just this past hour. It always feels like, even though we're looking at the week ahead, it's like a week of news happens in a day on Monday. So Kimberly, again, in the last couple of seconds, sort of what issue in this coming week are you really going to be focused on?
That answer has changed now from the Kavanaugh nomination to what happens at the Justice Department and the Mueller probe. That really is the key issue hanging over the entire Trump presidency. And I think figuring out exactly where that stands is going to be at the top of my agenda, at least.
Molly Ball?
Yeah, if anything, this hour that we've all just been through being buffeted by news is a perfect preview of the week ahead, right? Because I think we are all planning to spend the week ahead with our hair on fire, being constantly buffeted by news developments that we did not anticipate and do not have the bandwidth to handle, given the enormous glut of important things happening.
Susan Page, I'm smiling here, but in a way, it's no laughing matter. Keeping up with all of this knowledgeably is quite a challenge. But are you looking at the DOJ now for where you're going to focus on in the week ahead?
I don't think you have the option of just choosing one of these stories. You have stories that affect fundamental aspects of all three branches of our government. And by the way, they might shut down the government by the end of the week because they don't have enough money. So we're watching for that, too.
There's that, too. What a way to end this hour. Susan Page, USA Today Washington Bureau Chief. Always a pleasure to have you, Susan. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Molly Ball, national political correspondent for Time. It was great to talk with you, Molly. Thank you.
Thanks, Minda.
And Kimberly Atkins, Chief Washington Reporter for the Boston Herald. Kimberly, great to talk with you as well. Thank you so very much.
My pleasure.
And by the way, we've got links to all the reporting from Susan, Molly, and Kimberly on the issues that you just heard this hour. Go to onpointradio.org to catch up with that. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Welcome to Monday. This is On Point.